the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Golf Podcast, episode number 235. We've got so many exciting things going on around Golficity, and on this episode, we're going to talk about a key thing and a couple things you can do to gain more distance off the tee. Obviously, we all want to do that. We've approached this before, but we've got some other tips, some new ways of looking at it. That's going to be great. And you, hopefully you guys have some takeaways from that. We're going to talk about some recent rounds that we've played. We're going to talk about what we've got coming up on the YouTube channel, what's going on with the PGA Tour. Man, Mike, we've got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, we definitely do. And it's funny because you said you played, I played. When was the last time we both played on the same day and we weren't playing with each other? It's weird. But
I know.
You were down Jersey Shore as I was as well. And we were in two separate places. So where did you end up playing?
Yeah, so that was kind of funny. We both got a chance to take a little bit of a break, a little bit of a vacation.
It was nice.
Got away myself with the family for 5 days for Labor Day, head down to the Jersey Shore, and we played a course called Beacon Hill. It's a private club down there. My uncle's a member, so he invited me over there to play, and it was a lot of fun. It was a short track, incredibly tight track, especially the first three holes, to the point where it was a little bit of mayhem, I'll be honest with you, because it was so busy for Labor Day. And then you had, you know, two groups on each of these first three holes, which are just stacked next to each other. So you just look out there and you saw, you know, six groups of golfers out there. And it was just like, whoa, you know, but it was good. It was good to get out there. The one tough part about right now, and I think you had a similar experience, is that everybody's punching the greens right now.
Oh yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah, so we were out there, and that was one thing. You got to a certain point, and you had to take it with a grain of salt. You know, once you hit the greens, as far as it made it tough. You know, a couple times we would get, you know, if you got within that like 1 or 2 foot circle, we were starting to say, look, that's good. It's a gimme, because it was getting to a little bit silly that you don't want to be that guy. It's like, what? And then it jumps around like Plinko and, you know, it ruins your day. So
I love that rule. You did 1 or 2 feet. We actually did something completely different. We just said, if you hit the green in regulation, it's automatic 2-putt.
That's nice. That's something.
You know, these things were like sludgy and tons of holes, deep holes. Like, they were fresh.
Holes and a lot of sand. It really slows it down. But, you know, I actually was enjoying putting because I was putting well. I was putting really well. And I made, even with those greens, I drained a couple of really long putts that day. You know, we're talking like really long but makeable 12 to 15 footers that really saved my round and saved my score. And it was actually kind of a funny thing, because you know how a couple of weeks ago you were mentioning here, and a couple of people mentioned in the Facebook group, they shared they had similar experiences when you feel like you're hitting the ball really well but the score doesn't reflect it. I was the opposite. I was really not moving the ball well. I was a mess off the tee that day, but I feel like my score was being saved by cleaning it up around the greens much better than I have many of the other times out. I ended up with, you know, I think it was like maybe four or five 1-putts on the day. And to me, that's solid. And I think maybe 1 or 2 3-putts, even with those greens. So it was a lot of 2-putts and a lot of made putts. And I'm going to tell you what, if I'm going to attribute it to anything, it's that putt out, man.
Yeah, right.
Helps. I tell you, like, you see, it's like, it's hot right now. No doubt about it. It's hot right now. Everybody's talking about it. You guys have probably seen a lot of it on our YouTube channel and on Golficity. But I think the best part about the putt out is that it's addicting. Because the problem is like, we don't practice enough. We talk about it all the time, right? You got to practice to get better at this game. So I think by making it kind of fun, like putting practice fun, and the fact that it's addicting, you just kind of work with it. And proof that it's addicting, this is kind of funny. I got it and I laid it out and I started using it in the living room because I wanted to get my 4-year-old daughter involved. I wanted to like see if she was like interested, and she was. She wanted to do it. And this is how I'm trying to sneak it in there, that she starts to learn the game.
Right.
But then out of nowhere, my wife, who literally has really just no interest whatsoever in golf. I mean, she'll once or twice she'll come out there and ride in the cart or whatever, but no real interest. Anyway, I see her just kind of like watching me, and I'm like, I could tell, like, she's she's itching, right? And I'm like, well, what's up? I'm like, do you want to try it? And then she's like, yeah, give me that thing. I want to try it. Then I couldn't get her off of it. She's out there. She's just like a half hour. I'm like, all right, can I have my putt out back now? You know, because it is. It's just, even if you don't golf, it's addicting. But anyway, just by doing that, and I was just using it to just keep that the repetitive motion of my putting stroke, and then I just tried to transition that out on the course and just simplifying it and just doing it, and it really did work. And that's, I mean, that's the reality for all areas of this game. If you want to get better, if you want to play well, you just have to grind. You know, I don't care how much, you know, talent you have. Talent is not going to take you all the way there. And if you don't have the talent, if you've got the dedication, it's all about doing it. It's all about practicing. I mean, my game, if it ebbs and flows, it ebbs and flows based on how much golf I'm able to play.
Yeah,
and right. By doing something like this, you know, we talk about having busy lives. It's nice. It's like a little thing. It's 8-foot mat. You roll it out. You could just do it while you're watching TV, you know, and then I immediately translated to better results. And I know I was speaking briefly to Chris McEwen, who did a great review of the putt out, and he was saying the same thing. He's like, you wouldn't believe how many one putts I'm draining all of a sudden. So yep. I it felt good. It felt good to salvage a score out there based on that.
It's creating that feel for putting. And you know, it's funny, going to the Jersey Shore with my family for an entire week, I ended up playing mini golf 3 times in the week. Okay, because all my 5-year-old wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't want to go to the theme park, she just wanted to play mini golf. Well, I want to brag about my final round. We stayed away from the Bethpage Black of mini golf tracks down there too hard. I won't go near it.
Oh my God.
But we went to an easier course, and I ended up going 6 under with 6 hole-in-ones. Dude, I was lighting it up out there, and I felt really good. And same with you. I kind of attribute a lot of it to getting that feel from using this putt out. It's actually pretty amazing.
So did you try to buy that plastic rubber putter?
I should have took that putter.
Just take that home, man.
And then just steal yours and replace it with that and see if you notice.
Unless you're the type of guy who brings his putter to a mini golf.
I wanted to bring it. Remember, I wanted you to bring the Bettinardi. Yeah,
that
I know.
That would be something. That would be something. But anyway, so it really felt good. And reflecting back on it, to see that my putting was getting better. So and by no means is this, you know, any type of sponsored endorsement or anything like that. Like I said, the putt out is just something that's really worked really well for me. I've really enjoyed it. And I know that that's helped. And like I said, when I look at that, it teaches me so much about scoring in this game, because I'm like, even though I was not getting off the tee well, I was putting together a good score because I was really relying on you know, on and around the green. But speaking of stats, I think, Mike, this is probably a perfect time to bring in our new segment. We're going to call the stats segment, presented by ShotScope. The ShotScope V2, it's the only GPS watch on the market that combines GPS distances to greens and hazards with automatic performance tracking. That tracking is built right in. So essentially, it's a GPS plus automatic performance tracking, and it's all in this watch that you wear and these little sensors that you put on your clubs. You wear the V2 watch, you play golf like normal, the magic happens in the background. There's no phone needed, Mike, which I love, because it saves the heck out of my battery. Mm-hmm. And I just like how that performance is being tracked in the background. It's very like mind off of it. You don't have to be thinking about it, worrying about it. And you're getting hundreds of stats in the background just to improve your game. Plus, they've got over 40,000 courses worldwide, so you can track your stats pretty much any course that you could play. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, I'm actually having some fun with this thing. And for those of you who listen to the show, or I should say watch the show on YouTube, where you could see us, I'm actually holding up the ShotScope watch here. But, you know, Frank, I liked it. I think it was pretty cool. And, you know, for this stat segment we're going to do, I think today is appropriate. Let's start with this thing called the performance tab. So bring that up real quick on your phone. I have mine up here. Click on, there's clubs, tee shots, approaches, short game. Go to short game.
Gotcha.
And this is really cool. So I played a couple of rounds now with this, and it shows that my proximity to the hole right smack in the middle is 15 feet. So what do you have there?
15 feet, solid. I'm at 25 feet proximity of the hole.
All right. So
and what I like now, too, is I can narrow this down by either all clubs, or I can go my gap wedge, my sand wedge, lob wedge, or pitching wedge.
So you could see what clubs you need more improvement hitting your target. I like that.
Exactly. My pitching wedge is solid at 13 feet.
Yeah, that's pretty
solid.
And
I'm 80% up and down with my pitching wedge.
You see that?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. I mean, I like that it's a coach, it's a training aid. You can take it with you off the round. You take it to the range. You look at these stats before you go or while you're there, and you see, like, where do I need help? Where do I need to improve? Just like you said, you're locked in with that pitching wedge. Maybe you just don't, you know, practice with that as much. I don't know. Maybe change your routine.
We've always said, like, and we've talked about this episode after episode, where we say we're all on this time crunch. We're not PGA Tour pros who can practice 4 or 5 hours a day. You know, so because I've got that small window to practice, I can kind of go after that low hanging fruit. So here I'm diving in and I'm looking at this thing, and it looks like what's really skewing my stats here is my my gap wedge. So I'm missing far too often, and my proximity to the hole is far too far with that. So that identifies that that's a yardage that I need to get back out there and look at. So that gap wedge is my, that would be my 48 degree. Mm-hmm. What I have here tagged as my sand wedge would be my 52. And then my lob wedge would be my 60, right? So I just know that distance, which is about 100 out, is a struggle for me right now. There's something there that needs to be worked on. My pitching wedge, which is usually by my 125 club, is spot on. I mean, we're, you know, pretty darn good, but that tells me, so I, instead of going out there and just wasting my time and just like whatever at the range, I know I'll pick a target that's 100 yards out, go after it, you know, play again with the watch, go back out and see if it made an improvement.
Yeah, it's cool, man. And what was that number you were spitting out before, that your percentage miss left off the tee?
Oh man. Yeah, hold on a second. I'm going to jump out the tee shots, cuz this will really tell you something. My when I miss left 85% of the time. And this is so funny because I've talked about this before. Like, my miss is a big hook. Right? Because my natural shot shape is a draw. And when it goes wrong, it goes hook wrong. And it actually, I had, we had the guys from Me and My Golf on the episode not too long ago, and they analyzed our swing and they were helping me work on my miss, my hook. But it was kind of funny. We were playing this one hole and there's water down the whole right side. And I'm just like, whatever. Like, that's like not even there.
Doesn't matter.
Right? I'm like, pull out the driver. I don't even think about it. But it's clearly there. Everybody who slices gets in trouble. I'm like, it's not going to bother me. You know, the 8% chance that I miss right, it doesn't happen that often.
But you see how crucial that stat is, and I love how this gives you that stat, because remember when we were fitted with Sprecher, what was the first thing he said to us was, What's your miss?
You
got to know what your miss is, because you got to know what to improve. So, you know, not to make this segment 8 minutes long. You know, I think, you know, something like this is so crucial to improving. I think ShotScope has it, Frank. I think it's cool. I love the fact that you leave the course and your phone battery is at 90%.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, I think
Look, I'm loving this segment. I want to keep this going because I think this is important for all those reasons you're saying. Like, let's take a look. If we look at the raw numbers, that's how we know how we can improve. And you're so right. Not only for your own improvement, whether you're working with a club fitter or you're working with a teaching professional, the more info you can give them, the more you're going to get out of it. If you know going in, you know, and here we see hard facts, is not just guessing. Like, I feel like I miss often. I can say I miss right 85%. I miss, you know, left 85% of the time. There you go. But anyway, I'll tell you another quick story that, because that just reminded me, that same hole, right, with that water down the right.
Right.
Everybody who was playing, in our group, it was our first time playing this course, and we got paired up with one member. My uncle, who's a member there, he's injured, so he wasn't able to play with us. We got paired up with one member, and really incredibly nice guy, but he had really no length whatsoever. I mean, his tee shots, you know, were short. So we were, not to knock his game because he was a good player, but we obviously would be using different clubs in different positions. Anyway, we had that one hole, and he was trying to help us out around the course and like what to bring where and whatever. There was one spot where he's like, you leave the cart here and then we've got to walk to the next tee box. So he's like, bring your driver to the green, because after we finish up on this green, we're going to walk over to the next tee box, tee off, and then we'll come back to whatever. Well, me and my buddy who we're playing with, we get up to this tee box, and this is no way, shape, or form a driver hole for us. Ooh, and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be the guy who walks back like 200 yards to the cart to go get something different, because it's a friendly round. I'm like, I'll just hit it. And it got a little bit sloppy, because it was just like, it was an incredibly short par four that wrapped around this water on the right. So the right play would have been to lay like a 5-iron out there and leave yourself another like 150 out shot in. Driver, it was just got way too tight, and it was just nowhere to, so I ended up, I overshot the fairway, and I ended up behind a tree on the left, completely blocked out, and had to punch it back to the fairway. So I was a little bit you know, frustrated with that, but like not mad at the guy because he, you know, who's all good intentions, you know, he brings his driver there. So he's thinking, bring your driver. But I'm like, oh shoot.
He's bringing it.
Saying the same thing. He's like, oh, glad I brought my driver, you know?
Yeah. He's bringing his driver to a par three. That guy, you can't really trust him.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a tough one, but, it was a short, tight track, but it was fun. It was challenging. You know, it was some nice views of New York City, Manhattan from where we were.
That's
beautiful
cool.
Little track. So, great place to play. But anyway, before we talk about tonight's, you know, main instructional topic, a couple things that we've got coming up. I know we've got Michael Collins coming on the show, right?
Yeah, that was fun. And I caught up with him at the Northern Trust Open at Ridgewood. And, you know, I just went right up to him. He was a down-to-earth guy. We had a nice chat. And, you know, I've been following him on Twitter and Instagram for some time. You know, he's linked up with Pat Perez and he's got a lot going on. He's like the most liked guy behind the scenes at the PGA Tour. And so we had a really fun interview. So definitely check that out. That'll drop next week.
That's good. Yeah. We're going to drop that one next week. I wasn't there. That was one of the days you were there when I wasn't. So, that's awesome. So we'll get that, interview in the next episode. And then the other thing too is, speaking of the PGA Tour, I want to talk really briefly about Bryson DeChambeau because we're seeing him right now, you know, just won the first two events of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And I just thought that this was such an embodiment of how humbling and crazy this game is. I felt like this was such a relatable thing to see what he's going through because it really wasn't that long ago. I think it was at the Open Championship when we saw, you know, Bryson, we witnessed him have that complete meltdown on the driving range. I mean, that was almost like tough to watch. Like, this
right.
Poor guy, you know what I mean? He had a meltdown out there. And to go from that to being like on top, I mean, what a couple of weeks. The guy wins two in a row and then he makes the Ryder Cup team. And I think that just like, it just kind of shows you that no matter what level you play at, this is a humbling game. You're going to have highs, you're going to have lows. Another thing that I saw that kind of like tied into that, and I had this theme going in my mind all week. I'm like, I got to talk about this on the podcast. Just last week, our guest was Eric Anders Lang. I've been following him on Instagram. He's traveling Scotland right now, and he was showing how like he had, you know, and he's a really good golfer. You know, you watch his stuff, you'll see he's a great golfer. He had an 11 on one hole, and he talks about it in his Instagram post. He's like, I wasn't mad about it. I was actually happy about it. You know, and he just kind of showed. He said like how things can go like wrong really quick, but how you just realize that, you know, golf is about riding those highs and lows. And with Bryson, it just shows you it happens at every level of the game. You just need to be able to understand that. And I think once you get to that point, that tipping point where you can start to enjoy that aspect of the game, rather than always being frustrated that you're not quite doing what you want to do, whatever, enjoy where you're at, you know, kind of celebrate when you do play well. I think far too often when we do play well, what we think of like the couple of shots that would have made it even better or whatever it may be, rather than thinking about all the good that came of it. So I'd say it's just rather than always trying to like change everything you're doing, just work on grinding it out, getting those improvement, but understand that that's what golf is. It's a ride, you know, it's an ups, it's downs, it's a roller coaster. I mean, enjoy the ride, so to speak. And understand that it is humbling and it happens at all aspects of the sport. And it's proof that you can't master this sport. I mean, look at some of the biggest names. It seemed like just a couple of years ago, guys were completely dominating. And now we just, you know, on the PGA Tour, now we just kind of hear their names here and there, you know, Hunter Mahan, guys like that. And it's just like, it just shows you like, no matter who you are, what level you've attained in this game, you know, there's always, it'll never be mastered. So just enjoy the chase, if anything.
Exactly. It's a good point.
Yeah.
I like it.
So that's a great thing. And then I know I'm hopping around, but there's a couple things I want to hit on here before we jump into our topic. The other big thing, make sure if you guys haven't checked it out yet, you might be watching this podcast on our YouTube channel. We've been recently putting more of the video episodes there, but we just recently crossed over to 5,000 subscribers. Huge, huge thank you to everybody. That's been a huge surprise for us, right, Mike?
Yeah, big time.
Because, I mean, we just launched the channel, like, and we had it for a while, but then we just started putting some video on there just because people were asking, hey, let's see some video stuff of what you guys are doing. Like, sure, turn on the cameras. And it's kind of just skyrocketed to 5,000 subscribers. I, you know, can't share enough thanks to everybody for subscribing and helping us grow that channel, because it's opening up even more doors, more things that we can do with the show. But we're going to try to keep giving back. So probably, you know, you and I are going to film it tomorrow. I would imagine probably by the time this episode drops, we're going to have a video on there just to highlight, you know, 5,000 subscribers. And we're going to do our first giveaway on the channel. So stay tuned for that. Watch it on our YouTube channel. You can see how you can enter. There'll be plenty of time to enter. And it's going to be the start of a series of really great giveaways. I can't even tell you guys what we have coming up, but we've got some big stuff coming up on the channel.
Love giveaways.
Love them too.
I love them. They're great.
It's just like, it feels good to be able to give back. Cause I can't tell you guys how much we appreciate everybody, you know, watching and following along with the journey. And then speaking of giveaways, the other thing I want to tell everybody, the Virtual Open prize list is officially out. Okay. It's out there. The door prizes, the names, the winners have been posted. You can go to golfficity.com/open. You're going to see all the winners and the instructions on how you can claim your prize, but hurry, jump in there. All the prizes have to be claimed by October 1st. So you guys have about a month to get in there and claim them. About half of them have already been claimed. Mm-hmm. We posted it in the Facebook group. If you're not a member of the Facebook group, jump in there because you're going to be the first to hear about stuff when it comes out. But we posted it on 18 Birdies in the feed, and you know, we're announcing it here now too. And huge prizes. Again, thank you to all the sponsors there. The guys at Me and My Golf were cool enough to donate some really great full access memberships. True Linkswear came through huge for us. I mean, they have two $100 gift cards, five $50 gift cards, and one free pair. Whatever pair you want is what they gave away. So like right there alone, they gave away over $500 worth of their stuff, and True Linkswear makes amazing stuff. We've got some slide belts on there, Swannies, Golficity stuff, Golficity hats. So check that out. If you won, follow the instructions on how to claim that, and we'll get your prize sent out to you. And a huge congrats to all of our winners, and a big thank you for everybody who participated this year.
Yeah, man. Love it. Can't wait for next year.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, so before we jump into how you can get a little bit more distance off the tee, something that everybody wants to do, let's do a quick word from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by Titleist. Look, guys, it's not too late to upgrade your irons, and if you're planning on it, you need to check out the AP2 and AP3 iron lineup. Mike and I were both fitted for AP3s recently, and the performance has been incredible. So here's the difference. Titleist 718 AP2 irons are the gold standard for modern tour irons. These beauties, they're made with a forged steel construction, a high-density tungsten, and as a result, they offer tremendous speed and stability with tour validated feel and distance control.
You know, and it's funny, you almost walked out of there with the AP2s.
I absolutely almost did, yeah.
Until you tried the AP3s. So, yep. You know, now check it out. The AP3s, they represent the best of both worlds. That's why I love it. So get this. Titleist has merged everything that they've learned from creating the AP1s and the AP2s for their longest, fastest players iron ever. I mean, these things are sleek. Like you said, we both play them now, Frank. They perform excellent. They're easily one of the best performing clubs on tour and on the local weekend track for guys like us. So whether you're a tour player or you're just one of us amateurs trying to improve out here, they're definitely the right irons for you. Definitely give them a chance. So check them out, Titleist.com. Pretty much any golf shop that you shop at, you owe it to yourself to swing the AP lineup.
Yeah, and do that. Swing them both, because you're right, Mike. I was so ready to walk out there with the AP2s, and Kevin was like, let's just try the AP3s. And I'm like, wow. And then, then there was no taking them out of my hand at that point.
Right.
So that was really great stuff. This episode is also sponsored by Tommy John. Tommy John is the revolutionary clothing brand that's redefined comfort for men and women everywhere. Mike, these guys don't mess around. Tommy John's underwear performs like nothing you've ever worn before. They've got the no wedgie guarantee. They're comfortable. They've got the stay put waistbands, and they're made with a wide range of fabrics that are luxuriously soft, feather light, moisture wicking, breathable, and designed to move with you, not against you.
Well, that must be why Golf Digest rated them as the best underwear in golf. How about that? The best underwear in golf. That's a pretty cool thing. And that was for 2 years in a row. And Frank, how about their best-selling second skin underwear, which feels like you're commando when you're really not?
I'm wearing mine right now. Is that TMI?
I'm wearing them right now. I was going to stand up and show everyone, but I don't think that might be appropriate. Sorry. But they are amazing. I mean, you guys know what I mean. I mean, and to make it even sweeter, all Tommy John underwear is backed by their best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. So that includes their new life-changing women's underwear that was sold out in just 6 weeks. And now that's now back in stock. So if you have someone in your life you want to buy that for, that's great there. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. I love them. Like I said, I'm wearing them right now. Hurry to TommyJohn.com/golf for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/GOLF. For 20% off, TommyJohn.com/golf.
All right. So as we're going to talk here about squeezing a little bit more distance out of your drives, I want to first start this off by giving a huge shout out to Eric Payton, who's the author of this article, which is what we're going to base most of what we're our talking points on. Eric is a writer for Golficity. When he first dropped this article on there, it just caught my eye. And I was like texting Mike. I'm like, this is something we're going to talk about on the podcast, because really great points. And a little bit of background on Eric. He's been playing and teaching the game professionally, you know, at golf courses all over the Midwest since 2006. He was previously the pro at Prairie Dunes Country Club in Hutchinson, Kansas. It's a top 30 golf course in the United States. And he owns and operates his own golf business, Eric Payton Golf, out of Des Moines, Iowa, where he really helps, you know, share his passion and his love for the game. And it's really been a great addition having him write for Golficity, because, as I said, just a wealth of knowledge there. So what I like about this article, which I'll share in the show notes, which you can get to by going to golficity/episode235, or as always, in the Golficity app, the free Golficity app, just hit that podcast icon at the bottom. It'll bring up every podcast. With you can play them right there. Show notes are right there. Links are right there. Everything is there for you. But what I like about this is it's short, it's to the point, it's very actionable. It's not huge changes you need to make, just mm-hmm. little things you could do, little tweaks you can do. Try them. I always say, you know, with any little change, try it on the range before you take it out on the course, obviously. But it's something you can just tweak a little bit. You don't even need to try all six. We're going to talk about six that he highlights in this particular article. Try one or two, see if it helps you a little bit. And it really can help you kind of squeeze out that little extra 10, 15 yards we're all looking for. And it can really make a difference. As you know, like just shorten up those approach shots can be a real benefit for your game. So let's just do this. Let's just dive right into it. And the very first thing that Eric highlights here is just kind of flaring open your front foot. So for a righty, this is going to be your left foot. And what he talks about here, and many of you, again, there might be some things that you're already doing, in which case, great. You know, it's just good to be aware of it. Even just be aware that you're doing it and why you're doing it kind of sometimes helps. But what you could do is just take that front foot and just kind of flare it out a little bit. Don't point it all the way directly at the target. Not only is that going to look funny, it's going to feel really ridiculous, but just a little bit. Just try rotating a little bit out. And the reason we do this is that little change helps you to clear your hips and rotate through the ball a little bit easier. So,
interesting.
Yeah. And actually, this is kind of interesting, because the guy I played with over the past weekend actually was booming the ball pretty good. And I'm not the type of guy, and I always tell people, I'm not an instructor. You know, we've for anybody who's new listening to the podcast or watching us on YouTube, we say this a lot. Mike and I, we're not instructors. We're just guys who love learning the game. You know, we're mid-level handicappers like a lot of you guys listening. But if there's something that we've learned, we try to disseminate that here so you can learn from it, which is why when I'm out on the course, I don't like to screw people up and start giving them advice. Even sometimes when people ask me advice, I think more of my advice is usually referring them to a certain instructor or instruction that might work for that type of thing. But I don't like to mess with it, because instructors sometimes will see more of the whole swing,
right?
Than whatever. So I don't try to change little parts of people's swing, but it was kind of like I was chomping at the bit a little bit, because I noticed that his left foot was, if anything, turned a little bit in, you know, turned a little bit to the right. And I'm thinking, A, you either have to be super flexible to overcompensate for that, or you're possibly losing a little bit of power over that. So by just doing that, just take an inventory of your stance with the driver. And if your feet are a little bit too parallel, just try kind of like turning those left for the righty, those left toes out a little bit, and see if it gives you that greater range of motion. Because that's where power is going to come from. Power is going to come from rotation and motion. So being able to rotate your hips through the ball is what's going to really move it. You know. And speaking of which, another guy that I was playing with, it was like the opposite thing. He was getting like no distance. And he asked me after the fact, and he's like, why don't I get any distance? Because like he's a big guy, powerful guy. You should be able to get distance. And he wasn't. Right? I mean, you've played with this guy
before.
I'm not
going to
name names.
Yeah, we won't name names, but he said the same to me. I just don't hit the ball far. Yeah.
And I told him, actually, funny kind of story, because we're not telling names, I can tell you what happened. At one point, he was 100 and maybe 60, 150 yards out, and he laid up. He goes, I
don't want to laugh if he's here, if he's listening to this.
He goes, I can't reach. And I don't want to laugh either, but I think it's more so, it's like, I think with just this little bit of changes, you can get a little bit more out of it. So I was talking to him after it, and it was, I think it kind of annoyed him, because the guy we got paired up with told him when he kind of like, he chunked that shot. And he goes, the guy we're paired up with goes, that's what you get for laying up from 150.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that burned him. I think he was a little bit mad. And I don't know. Sometimes you gotta use the humor at the right time. If somebody's mad at their golf game, sometimes it's not the time to rub it in. But anyway, he asked me after the fact, and I was like, I think you got some solid mechanics there. I think the only difference here is that you've got to rotate more. I think it's because he's a stronger guy, upper body. He's just trying to like muscle through the ball. But there's no amount of muscling that's going to get the ball anywhere near as far as you can get by turning. So I'm like, listen, I'm not going to dissect your whole swing. I would say approach an instructor with this thing. Tell them about your distance. But I think what you're going to hear is that you got to build more rotation into your swing, because there wasn't a lot of rotation. There was a lot of just him like hitting the ball, you know, trying to use muscle rather than using physics, so to speak.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So.
Yeah, I get it.
Anyway.
I'm laughing more at the story because I know the two guys you're talking to. And it's a funny backstory because one of the guy who's knocking him is marrying his sister soon. So it's like, it's funny.
Yeah, it is. but it was like I said, like just a little bit more. So anyway, try that. By flaring that front foot open a little bit, you're going to be able to rotate through the ball a little bit more. Another great tip he has here is relaxing your muscles. And this kind of goes to what I was saying, like when you try to muscle the ball, a lot of times like the kind of natural, almost like primitive thing that we get, almost like a fight or flight thing, when we want to hit the ball further, we tend to tense up our muscles. And again, the opposite is going to be true. When you try to get more distance, you've got to increase that flexibility, be more nimble, be able to get that speed. Speed comes from being able to rotate through and move through. And if you're stiff, rotation doesn't really happen. So you've got to
so guilty of this.
Yeah, and you got to resist that temptation to tense your muscles up. One thing that I can kind of interject there, my own way I do this is I've built into my pre-shot routine, which we've talked about before here, pre-shot routines and having them be the same over time and time again. As a reminder, I take one big deep breath before I take my swing, and I use that for A, to relax, but B, as just kind of an inventory. If you just take that moment and just take an inventory of, is there anywhere that you're tensing up? And sometimes I'll feel a little bit tense and I'll be like, okay, I know what's going on here, you know what I mean? And then I can relax it. So you just kind of got to resist that temptation. You've got to bring your awareness to it so you can be A, just aware that you're tense, and then B, relax it. And then by doing that, you can really, really kind of like move through the ball better. And we talked about before grip pressure. Remember, we did a whole episode on grip pressure. Here, Eric mentions a very similar thing, and he's got a good tip here. He says, and the reason for that grip pressure, if you're gripping that club too tight, you can't release your hands through the ball. That release is where a lot of power comes from. So I always look for new visualizations and new ways to kind of like, you know, visualize it. So other people might attach to certain visualizations. This is a great one. He said, imagine your club is a tube of toothpaste with the cap off and pointing down towards the ground. If you were to swing that tube, no toothpaste should come out.
I like that.
That's how loose you should grip it. So that's a great visualization.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's true. And it's hard for a lot of times. It's hard for a lot of golfers to realize how light it really is. Like, we've heard the baby bird analogy, all those types of things. And we covered one instructional article a while back where I think it was said in there that you would not believe how light a PGA Tour pro is gripping that club. But this is another great visualization, and it's another key point. We talked about cleaning your clubs not too long ago, why you got to keep those grips in good order, cleaning them, replacing them, because as your grips wear out, it becomes harder and harder to grip it that way. A good grip will give you that confidence that you need to grip it as light as you need to do. So try the toothpaste technique and see if it helps anybody out there. And if it does, report it back in the Facebook group, because I'd love to hear about it. So that's an important one. Here's another one, Mike, we're both guilty of. Swing a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds counterintuitive, right? Because everybody seems to always talk about swing speed, swing speed, swing speed, right? Maximize swing speed. But a great point that Eric makes here, he says, never sacrifice centeredness of contact to gain swing speed. And he said, the harder we swing, the less likely we are to hit the sweet spot. So when you swing harder than normal, essentially what you're doing is sacrificing centeredness of contact to gain swing speed. Instead, try swinging a little bit slower, about 85 to 90% intensity, to ensure you hit the center of that club face. And that will end up in more distance, because you're going to be maximizing the force with the club by hitting that sweet spot. Those off-centered hits, you will end up losing a lot of distance and power that way. So that was great. And I always take the constructive criticism myself, 100%. Well, that's why we always tell people, guys, we're on the chase too. We're not pros. Someone had made, you know, I ride there's the good and the bad with comments, especially on YouTube, right? But try to learn from all of them, you know, take the good with the bad. And there was one that one guy said, you know, you guys are swinging way too fast for your current ability and your level of play. And I'm like, you know what? It's a good point. I like to have an extra set of eyes on it. Sometimes I get this out of my mind and I start ramping up. I start swinging too fast, and this is a good time to back it off.
Same.
Excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, I how guilty have I been all my last few years? Everyone's telling me, slow down, slow down.
Yeah, and honestly, playing with you, some of your biggest drives, I remember you saying when you were swinging, it felt like you're swinging slow.
Right?
It's because amazing. Truthfully, you swing it so fast. Like, your slow is other people's quick, you know? But you, like, really ramp it up sometimes. But that's when you gain that centeredness of contact, and we all felt it. When you get that nice, that feel, when you hit it right in the sweet spot, you just know you've connected with it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to work on this more, slowing it down a little bit. And, you know, I find I wow myself a lot when I do that. And I'm like, wow, I don't feel like I swung it that hard. And look at the distance I got out of it. So
yeah.
And accuracy. I'm with you, though.
Accuracy. Right, and accuracy.
Because the distance in the world don't matter if you're four fairways over in a lake or something.
That's true. You know? That's true.
So that's one thing. Another great point he has here is taking a little bit of a wider stance. This is something that often you see with newer golfers. Their stance isn't quite wide enough. Or if you feel like it already is, you can experiment. Now, it doesn't hurt to experiment. Just widen it a little bit more. Obviously, the wider your stance, the more of a secure base you're going to have. And by having that base, you have that better balance. And that's where you can swing a little bit more speed, put a little bit more speed and remain balanced. A lot of times when we see guys are you know, hitting sometimes the ground with the driver, hitting behind the ball or something like that, chunking it, a lot of that comes down to balance. We've talked about balance being so important. And by just having a little bit of a wider base, you're going to be able to have a little bit more balance. So that's something you can try and see how that goes for you. And another tip here, I think this is our fifth tip, is tee it high and tilt back. And this is something that I put into my swing, I want to say 3 years ago. And I have really, it felt weird at first. It really did feel weird for the first half a season. But now it's like second nature to me. And we talk about that like reverse K stance. I think this is actually something that I learned originally from Kyle Aldering. Remember, we had Kyle on the show a couple of times. He was an instructor, and he really kind of helped us out. Really nice guy. I ended up videotaping my swing and sending it to him, and he did a whole analysis for me.
Right.
And then what was kind of like validating to me was that when the guys from Me and My Golf, Piers and Andy, when they analyzed my swing, they commended me on that setup. They're like, oh, look, Frank's got the reverse K going, you know, that nice tilt back. So that was something that I had learned from Kyle, and I've employed it ever since. And where we've done these fittings lately, and we've done a lot in the simulator, where they say that I'm hitting up on the ball well, where I'm pretty efficient there. And we talked about before, my smash factor was pretty darn good. I attribute all of that to this part of the setup. So what you do with that is you know, a lot of people say stay down on the ball and whatever it may be, but with the driver, driver's a different animal than the rest of the clubs. Because you've got the benefit of the tee, being able to hit a little bit more upward on the ball through impact is what's going to get it in the air. Remember, you're not relying on loft with the driver. You're more so on a good drive is going to be hitting up on it. If you look at the PGA Tour pros, if you look at them from face on, you'll see in their setup, they've got this nice tilt back. So what you want to do is just tee that ball a little bit higher, tilt your spine backwards, and then, you know, tilt just a little bit, and then, you know, where you see that front shoulder starting to point up in the air a little bit. Again, hard thing to describe on this medium. So you'll see, we'll post some pictures in the article and in the show notes. We'll help you guys out with that. You can also search it on YouTube. Lots of great instruction there for like reverse K setup and you know, slight tilt, and you can look those things up and you'll see what I mean with it. But just being able to do that is going to give you a little bit more loft without actually changing the loft of your club. So if you strike it solidly from this position, you're going to get a little bit more out of it because you're going to be able to get that ball up in the air. And that's what you really want to do with a driver.
Did you find it weird that I still, according to all my fittings and all the analysis, the TrackMans, everything shows that I still swing down on my drives?
I know. It's crazy. You're still hitting down on it.
I can't fix that, man. I've been trying.
Yeah, but not everything needs to be fixed. Because of the fact that you're getting so much, your distance really isn't a problem. You're getting so much distance.
But you know, I could be getting more with a better flight path. If I can learn to hit a draw, if I can, I don't know. I just feel like maybe I am limiting myself.
You might be. I would experiment with it a little bit and see if it whatever. But there are some guys who hit down on the ball and are fine with it. Like I think this is more so like if you weren't getting the distance, you want to squeeze a little bit more. For you, I think your primary focus is a little bit more consistency and accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? I mean, I've really enjoyed this setup since I've done it. Like I said, it just felt weird for a while, but it was one of those things like you're working through a swing change, just work through it, stick it out and work through it. And that's what I did. And now it feels natural, sense. But it takes time to make any of these things feel natural. That I will say for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
So give that a shot. And then the final thing we have is just putting a little bit of a stronger grip on it. And now, do not confuse this. I think this is something that a lot of new golfers get confused. When you hear stronger grip, it doesn't mean grip pressure. It's grip position, not grip pressure. Keep that in mind. And again, this is another great thing too. If you, the person needs a visual for this, look it up, YouTube, Google it, whatever, the, you know, pictures of stronger versus weaker grips. So remember in grip of this, it's stronger, weaker is the grip position. Looser, tighter is how you're holding it. So what a strong grip is one that rotates slightly back or clockwise on the grip itself. And a stronger grip is going to force you to rotate the club through impact quicker and more effectively. It could also lead to draws, which also travel further. So you really want to, you know, be sure to play that and work with it. I think grip changes are one of the hardest things. It can also work the opposite way. So for me, and again, kind of going back to that same, the tips that I got from the guys at Me and My Golf, what they said was they actually wanted me to weaken my grip a little bit when I was hooking it too much because I'm somebody who's has a draw, right? And
right.
He's like, if you weaken that grip enough, you're going to prevent that really, you know, over because that's where I'm actually rotating the club too much through impact. I'm rotating that club so much through impact that it's creating that side spin that's causing the hook when I miss. So they're saying if there's those holes that you really can't go left, in that case, weaken the grip and then whatever. But it just shows that there's so much that can be changed, which is changing small things in your setup.
Right.
Stance, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's also stance that does get involved. You know, for a righty, the further forward you put your left foot, the more it's going to play to a draw. Back is going to play more to a fade. So there's things that work into it. And then you can change things with grip as well. But it's a good thing to do, at least bring your attention to it, analyze your grip. If you're playing, just generally playing just a way too weak of a grip, you can often get a little bit more out of it by just, you know, for a righty, turning that right hand clockwise a little bit more, getting a little bit stronger grip, and watching what it does for turning your hands over at the ball at impact.
Dude, I love it. I love how you're preaching it, and everyone preaches it to me. Stop the caveman grip. They keep telling me that.
Well, because your grip is very strong, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, and, you know, I think, you know, overall, Eric, you know, I'm clapping. Great article. These six tips, yeah. I mean, I could use all six, and it's definitely something that I'm going to bring over to the range. I have to, because my game has struggled lately, you know, and I don't want to give up on the season, because it's only September 5th right now. So, you know, I still probably have 6, 7, 8 rounds left, and I don't want to give up on the season yet. A couple of bad rounds can't really keep me away. And a lot of these things I'm doing. As you're rambling them off, Frank, as you're saying, I'm like, oh yeah, I am doing that. You know, so very helpful. This is huge.
Right. And I think the big thing would be to reduce confusion and frustration is not to try to attack all of these at once. Mm-hmm. I would pick one or two, work on it, see if you get improvement, then pick one like more, that. You know, work your way through it, because when you try to change too much, you end up just hugely frustrated and it's a mess. But yeah, big shout out to Eric for this excellent article. Speaking of which, if you're out there, if you've done some instruction before, or if you just, you know, have an opinion to share and you've done some writing before, we're always looking for new contributors for the site. We try to use it as a platform where we can give voice to people who may not have a voice elsewhere. They're not you know, traditional career path writers, but they've got something about the game that they want to say. That's where we try to like really kind of open up this community of our contributors. So let us know. You know, you can always you can email us podcast@golficity.com. Let us know you're interested. We'll point you in the right direction if you're interested in writing for Golficity. We've actually had a lot of our best writers have come from people who listen to the show and then have gotten involved. So it's a great way, and it's a great way to get yourself a little bit more exposure and put it out there on the Golficity platform. So all good stuff. Like I said, you can get to the show notes by going to golficity.com/episode235 or looking at the show notes in the app, which, as you guys know, is 100% free. You can download that for iOS or Android. Just search Golficity, you'll find it, or go to golficity.com/app for those links. Thank you everybody for tuning in, and we'll see everybody again next week.